is that?
Identify yourself.
Stand down.
Welcome, everyone, from across the universe to the Wampa's Lair podcast. Star Wars is for everyone, so pull up a chair, get comfortable, and join the conversation with your hosts, Carl LeClaire and Jason Hunt, here in the Wampa's Lair.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another exciting episode of the Wampa's Lair podcast, part of the Thunderquack Podcast Network. This is episode number 565, Day to Night. I'm, as always, one of your hosts, Jason Hunt, and with me, the stranger to my chimere, we have Carl LeClaire.
Oh, are we the same, Jason? I don't know.
I don't know. Hello.
Hello.
Yeah. Hello.
He's so good. Oh, man. Jason, I'm so excited to talk about these next two episodes of Acolyte. My goodness, were they incredible, I thought.
Yeah. Yes. And yes.
All the yeses.
Also, before we get started on all this, spoiler warning.
Yes, thank you, Jason.
Yeah. If you haven't watched these episodes, we're going to talk about everything that's in them. So, if you haven't watched them and you want to be spoiled, great. If you haven't watched the episodes and you don't want to be spoiled, come back later. We'll still be here.
Right. Exactly. But yeah, so we are going to dive into these two episodes, like Jason said, with all the details and highlights that spoke to us, that excited us. Jason, I'm continuing to love the heck out of this show. And I was just away over the weekend with some good friends of mine. Our buddy Greg was one of them, Ion Cannon Greg, who's just a force to be reckoned with in the Star Wars podcast world. Just one of the brightest guys I know. But we were obviously talking a lot of Acolyte over the weekend. And I told him, I was like, you know, this might be my second favorite Star Wars show to Ahsoka. And he was like, it's up there for me. He's like, I just need to wait and see it all before I can really land. I was like, that's a really good point, right? Like, how do they stick the landing will certainly be really big. And that is one of my few big critiques of the Ahsoka shows. I felt the finale was very lackluster. I mean, but that said, we also know there's going to be a season two, right? So purposely left Ahsoka, you in a way unsatisfied.
Yes, the Ahsoka finale is just the next chapter starting, you know, if you will.
Exactly. Exactly.
And I don't think we're getting a next chapter with whatever happens with the Acolyte. So
I was just reading a recent interview with Leslie Headland, and she said that she poured everything that she had into this story as if it would be a standalone series. She said she would love to do another season or two if they, you know, greenlight it. And she's like, I have ideas for future parts of this story, but I wrote this as if it was going to be a one and done. So I really like that. Right. And she's like, there'll definitely be things that people will continue to ask questions about, which, I mean, I think that's one of my favorite aspects of Star Wars is when they have little mysteries that are never fully answered, you know? But like as a story itself, it sounds like it'll have a very conclusive, satisfied ending, with the potential for future stories. But if it doesn't, you know, it's doing really well. Like, yes, there's a lot of vitriolic people online being absolute buttheads about it, but overall, these buttheads are still watching it. So like, it's still getting their attention. But overall it is actually very popular. It is one of the most heavily streamed Disney Plus shows in all of Disney Plus's history. So it's doing well. So I'm very hopeful for a future to this world.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know if I necessarily need a future to this storyline, but maybe a future to whoever survives this story.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And what she shared in this interview I read was essentially like, again, like, I've got this as a solid ending. Like, it's going to have an ending. But she's like, I have a few more mysteries I'd love to tease out in future seasons if we go that route. And it's like, yeah, that's cool. And, you know, like, when we talked a couple weeks ago about the first few episodes, I think one of my favorite attributes of this show is that sense of mystery. And even though we got a lot of answers in the last two episodes, right? We've seen the potential Sith Master. We know it's Chimaer now. Like, we know all these things, and yet we still have all these questions. Like, he seems to maybe know Sol. Does he know Sol? Like what still happened on Brendok? Like, there's still so many questions. And I think that is such I didn't realize what an essential element of Star Wars that is, that I really enjoy.
The mystery is great. And I, like you said, you know, it's great when they leave certain things unanswered. But you know, and I'm not saying this won't do that, but any good mystery has to leave with the big questions answered. And the big questions right now is, how the heck are we going to deal with, you know, Chimaer, the stranger, you know, how does that get wrapped up? What happened on Brendok? And for me, another one is, how did the twins come to be?
Sure.
Like, those are the big three questions I need answered in this show.
Yeah.
And we've got three more episodes to do that. So hopefully we'll get all of them answered.
That's right. Yeah. And so I was also reading that all of the episodes were given. So all the directors of the episodes were given two episodes to do. So Day and Night were both directed by the same person. I'm a butthead. I forgot to look up who it was. if you wouldn't mind, Jason, thank you.
Pull it up.
But those were the same director, which makes sense. I think Leslie, actually, I don't know if she directed the first two. I know she directed the first one. She may not have directed the second. But I know the person that directed the third episode, which, obviously the flashback episode, also directed the seventh episode. So we're probably going to get the full fleshed out backstory 2 weeks from now, right? Before the finale, which I wouldn't be surprised if Leslie also directs the finale.
Yeah, that would make sense to me.
So maybe the person that did episode two is also going to do episode six. Because 4 and 5 are the same director, 3 and 7 are the same director, and my guess would be that Leslie will bookend the series as the director.
Sorry, this is slowing down. So I'll get it. I'll let you know when I get it.
All right, for all you listening, like, you either don't care, you already know it, and you're like, you guys are knuckleheads, and you're right, we are. You know, Jason, I think one of the things I just want to shout out to, because I don't think I mentioned it when we talked the first times, I love all the wipes that we're getting. George went really hard on wipes in the prequels, especially. Like, there's a few in A New Hope, there's more in Empire, and there's a few more in Return of the Jedi. But Phantom Menace, every major scene change, there's a wipe. And I've always loved them because to me, it gives it a fairy tale aspect, right? Like, I feel like I'm turning a page, right? Like, next page of the storybook, let's go. I've seen some critiques of folks like complaining about the amount of wipes in the fifth episode, like during all the action scenes. It didn't bother me. I like the wipes. But I get it, like, that normally they're used to transition from scene to scene, like setting scene, right? Like, not necessarily every little action beat needs one.
Right.
But that said, like, I love them. I love them because to me, those are like George Lucas film language, and it gives it a sense of being a fairy tale, in my opinion. So I really enjoy those wipes.
Yeah. Alex Garcia Lopez is the one who directed these
two episodes.
I knew
it was a three-named director. Yeah. Thank you, Jason. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I do like the wipes a lot. I think the wipes are definitely a Star Wars trademark, if you will, or a Star Wars hallmark. Mm-hmm. I do think some of them were a little out of place in the fifth episode.
Sure.
I think there were probably a few too many, but I'm not going to complain too much about it because we're getting wipes in the story in general. So I'll deal with it. You know, not deal with it. I'll take it.
I'll deal with it. Jason's really having a hard time. Deal with it.
God, it's just terrible. No. I do think there were, like, there's a specific shot, and I can't remember what said right off the top of my head, but it's one of the shots where Soul and the Stranger are fighting, and they have a couple words, and then Soul, you know, raises his saber, and he
I know what you're talking about.
It's when he says, you
carry a Jedi's weapon, but you are no Jedi.
But you're no Jedi. And then he charges, and we get that wipe. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, that one's a little weird. I think it would have been, personally, from a creative perspective, I would have just done a smash cut as his saber kind of crosses camera and just, like, you know, have him literally cut to whatever the next scene was, you know, with the saber slash. But that's my creative brain going, that's how I would have done it differently. But that one felt a little out of place. And then the wipe to, like, that confrontation scene we get between Osha and May was a little weird, because it almost seemed like we were going to a different place on the planet for a minute.
Yeah.
And then it was like, oh no, we're right back there. Because we had a wipe that was like the big establishing shot of the sun rising. And that's what we were getting, is like, okay, the sun is coming back up, night's over. But then we went right back down to where we were with the two of them coming together. So those two felt a little bit out of place. So I can see where people are saying that. But it doesn't really matter that much to me.
Sure.
So
yeah, and I think there's a limitation in that scene between Osha and May, being that Amandala's playing both characters, right? So you have to cut certain ways because she can't literally clone herself. So episode two is still a long ways away, Jason. Right? It's 120.
Right.
110 years from now. So the Kaminoans aren't at it yet.
Or exactly. If they are, then, you know, the growing time is still, you know, it takes longer to grow them.
They're not
than
growing
just
them
double.
In half the time now, right? Yeah. So
exactly.
but the only other like kind of big thought I wanted to say before we dive into the particulars is, I've watched these episodes a lot, and I will say this is the most I've watched a Star Wars show since season one of Mandalorian. I mean, I watched Ahsoka a lot, but I'm watching these Acolyte episodes 4, 5, 6 times a week. I mean, I got time. Maybe I should find other things to do with my time, but this is how I love to take in Star Wars. I love repeat watches. And that said, these two episodes, I mean, understandably, they work so well together. They're really fun to watch back to back. I know a lot of people are clearly raving about the fifth because of how great the action is, and I totally get it. But my personal preference is for the fourth episode. I love the character moments, and I think all the payoff that we get in the fifth episode is thanks to the fourth episode. And his reveal. Oh, can we talk about that first, even though it's not, you know, where we're at?
Yeah.
But let's.
Yeah. I mean, okay, we're not doing this in any order,
right,
Carl.
We're just talking.
We're talking.
Yeah.
But yes, the reveal. The reveal of the Stranger is what he's called. Just floating down from the treetops to step behind. Creepy. I remember, you know, watching it and that shot happening, and I out loud to myself in my apartment that is only inhabited by me, I said, oh, I don't like that. Oh no, I don't like that. So creepy as Mustafar.
I think I've never been terrified in Star Wars before, and understandably, I don't think that's typically an element that goes into Star Wars. I am terrified in that scene. Like, and not like I wasn't like, oh my gosh, is there somebody under my covers type. You know, it's still Star Wars. I'm not that kind of scared. But they do give him like a horror character intro. I mean, I was just playing the music there in the background, like the shrill strings. Somebody like our friend Ashton could probably speak to this much more intelligently than I can. You know, just that, like the use of the strings is like this. I mean, that's typical horror music right there of, you know, a villain being revealed. And just, I mean, that mask, and he says nothing. And he's just, as he's slowly crunching through the leaves and walking towards Osha. It's terrifying. And it's so well done that, like I said, I mean, I've just never been afraid in Star Wars before. And there's just something so scary. And I think it all, I think it, to me, it starts with when May goes to surrender herself to Kalnaka, sees his dead body, and the terror. I mean, Amandla is such an incredible actor. The way she says, "He's here." And the terror, and then the sun sets, and it just goes dark in that hut, and the terror that's on her face is incredible. And as he starts to descend, I do love that Sol senses it, and I made a cheesy little smashed together photo on Instagram, but it's the same thing. And you talked about this moment recently when we were talking about our favorite Sith moments, when Vader is revealed to Kanan and Ezra in the start of season two of Rebels. And, you know, Ezra says, "Do you feel that? The cold," you know? And it, to me, like, that's Sol. Like, Sol feels that cold, and he turns, and that's when we see the stranger descending. Yeah. And it's like he's flying down. We've never seen that before. It's awesome.
Yeah. No, it's great. It's creepy. He looks like, you know, and he's wearing the cloak at the time. And so he kind of looks like he's detached from the shadows and is floating down like some sort of ghostly apparition of darkness. You know, it's creepy and it's very well executed. Like, oh, chef's kiss.
Yeah.
Chef's kiss to the director, the actors, the set designers, the cinematographers, everything, that the composer. This introduction might be one of the best things in the show right now. Mm-hmm. So
I'm at the point now where I would say the two coolest character entrances I've ever seen on screen are the Stranger and Acolyte and the Batman in the latest Batman movie. Like, his entrance in that movie is incredible. He just appears out of the darkness. We got to watch that together, my friend. You've still not seen it. I love that movie.
I haven't, but yes.
Yeah. But to me,
I'd love watching it with you.
Yeah. Oh, I'm probably annoying, but, no. But yeah, I mean, I love these entrances because there's just something iconic about it. It just pulls you right in. And I love Jackie when she says, "What is that?" Right? Like, she's speaking almost for us as the audience. Like, there is just this tremendous, like, and I love Yord's stand down. Like, there's something, and I know we'll probably talk more about Yord as the episode goes on. I really like Yord. I'm very sad that he's no longer with us. What Yord brings to the group in this episode, and I think even what he's brought in all the episodes prior to this, is he just brings a confidence. Like, yes, there's an arrogance to him, but there's also arrogance is bred from overconfidence, if anything, right? But there's still confidence there. And I think Yord being there, for me, I feel a little safe with him there. Like, when he says stand down, okay, I can be okay because Yord's here, right?
Yeah, it's stability. Yord brings a sense of stability, a sense of, like, there's still something to be done in whatever situation. There's still something that we are supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the rules are so ingrained in him that even when something terrifying appears out of the shadows, he still has that foundation to be like, stand down. Like, we're still going to do what we need to do in this situation and not just freak out. So, but yeah, no, he's great. He's great. Yord's fantastic. Jackie's amazing.
Yes.
Sol's my hero. Yeah. And I don't think it's going to be a good day for any of them by the end of the show. So I'm scared.
I think we knew going into this that all of the Jedi that were on this mission outside of Jackie, Yord, and Sol were probably going to die. Because they don't even get introduced. We don't even know their names. And I've seen some people complain about that. They're like, "Why would I even care about this?" It's like, whatever. Listen, like, that's Star Wars. Like, if you really think about it, if you watch Episode 3, Revenge of the Sith, if you've never watched Clone Wars, which also didn't exist at that time, or you've never read any of this expanded universe stuff, the Jedi Masters that walk into Palpatine's office with Mace, we have no relationship with them at all, right? We only know their names because of source books or other outside information. It's no different than that. Like, yes, we've seen them on screen a couple of times, but we don't know them at all. So when they get cut down by Palpatine, it's like, I don't really care. I mean, what's important is that they're getting cut down by Palpatine so easily. And I think that's what I appreciate right here is when, you know, when the fight begins, like the way the stranger just dispatches all of them so easily. I mean, Palpatine cuts down four on his own. This guy cuts down seven on his own. Like, not that numbers are everything, size matters not. But you know, like it's not about them as characters. I don't need to have an attachment to them. And I was blown away that they killed off Jekki and Yord. I mean, I could assume them maybe dying at some point in the series, but not that quickly. And they both have very brutal deaths. For Star Wars again, right? Like Star Wars is pretty PG, and I think rightfully so. And not that these are R-rated, but they're very brutal. And I think that's, again, it's a testament to who the stranger is. Like, there's a brutality to him that we've not quite seen before, you know?
Yeah. He's sort of ferocity embodied. You know, if Vader is, you know, the dark emblem of power, you know, and Maul is rage embodied, and Palpatine is manipulation embodied. This is fury or ferocity. This is ferocity embodied that we get from the stranger. You know, there's sort of one of these attributes that kind of define each of these dark side characters that we get. And I think ferocity is definitely what we get with the stranger. So and it's unexpected. The Jedi had no idea what they were getting into. You know, it's they were expecting to take Mei, who is skilled but not really a challenge for most of them.
Yes.
So
and
then he shows up with, you know, a Cortosis helmet and gauntlet that's shorting out their lightsabers for a second, you know, which, love that.
Very cool. Yeah.
Very cool to have that in there. But yeah, it was a shock to the system, and most of the Jedi were not able to adjust to that shock fast enough, shall we say.
Yeah. And when Yord is trying to get back to the ship with Osha, because he's following orders, because that's what Yord does.
Yeah.
And Osha says, like, what was that? And he's like, he's genuinely perplexed. He's like, I don't know. He doesn't follow the normal contentions of, you know, conventions of combat. I've never seen anything like this before. And I want to point out, and this is a little scene early on in the day episode. So in episode four, when we see Jekki training with the other students with their stick sabers, the instructor, if you pay attention to his dialogue, he's teaching them how to fight defensive only combat, right? They do not take aggressive forms of combat. And I thought that was really important to pay attention to his, and I didn't write down the exact quotes, but he's teaching them how to be defensive. And that's, now granted, I'm making a big assumption here, but it makes sense though, that like the Jedi of this era, they're really only taught how to fight defensively. So when you have something this ferocious coming at you, like, yes, you can defend yourself to a point, but to defeat an enemy like that, you're going to have to know how to go on the offensive at some point. And it seems like they're not really taught how to do that. And I feel like Yord kind of shows that to us. I mean, he's a full knight, right? Like, he's not a master yet, but he's a full knight. He's had a lot of training, and he is so dumbfounded about how to combat something like this because he's never been prepared for it.
Yeah. Well, and you know, to quote Ki-Adi-Mundi in The Phantom Menace, the Sith have been extinct for millennia. So, you know, the idea that one would have to encounter someone like this in, you know, just out in the wild, so to speak, is beyond any of their comprehension. You know, it's not something that they have thought to expect. You know, the dark side of the Force is, it's not supposed to be this active. It's not supposed to be this prepared. And of course, you know, the stranger knows that they're all here. Mm-hmm. They're all coming.
Yeah.
And he's relishing a confrontation. So he's been ready for this. They have no idea what this is.
Right.
You know.
Right.
Now, I do want to ask, you know, he does say, you know, when Sol asks him finally in episode five in the night episode, he does say, you know, Sol asks him, you know, what are you?
Yep.
And the stranger says, you know, some may call me Sith.
Yeah.
How do you take that?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, it's one that I'm sure we will get an answer to by the end of the series.
Mm-hmm.
I see it could go either way. I could see it as him indicating you guys would call me a Sith. He doesn't necessarily call himself that, but he could see them calling that. I could also see him being taking that as his title. Like, yeah, I'm a Sith. It's really unclear. And I kind of like that. Like, several. I like that it's ambiguous. Mm-hmm. So even though you asked me a straight question, Jason, I don't really have a hard answer for it. I think it could go either way. What's your thought on it?
I'm reading into things, and sort of developing a narrative about who I think Kimir the Stranger is. And what I think is he wants to be Sith.
Okay.
And he's trying to prove himself throughout all of this so that whoever, maybe he has run into an actual Sith like Plagueis or whoever's out there at this time. And he's trying to get in with them. And they're like, no, you're not worth my time yet. And so he's trying to prove himself in all of this. Or, you know, that's sort of my first idea of who he is in all of this. The second one is he is an apprentice, and he's doing what all Sith apprentices do, which is to try and find an acolyte.
Right. Which he's very clear on
the master.
Because he's like, what do you want? He's like, freedom to be who I want, freedom to have my powers and use it without constraint. I want it, but I also want an acolyte, right? Like he wants a partner in a twisted way, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And that could either mean because he's a Sith and he needs an acolyte to overthrow the master, or he likes the idea of what the Sith were, and he's trying to become one by having an acolyte. You know, he could be connected to someone, you know, an actual Sith, or he could just be enamored with the idea of what the Sith were, and he's sort of latched on to that idea as something he wants to be. You know, I don't know. And like you, I don't know. I don't have a solid answer and a solid sense of who he is yet, which is really cool and exciting. So,
yeah, I mean, I think he could be a Sith too, because he's like, you know, now that I've been revealed, I have to kill all of you. Like, because you say I can't exist. So now that you've all seen my face, I've got to kill you.
Right.
So it is his way of attempting to cover up the fact that there's Sith out there.
Right.
It could just be like, I have to kill you all because you say I can't exist as the way I am. Right. Like, there is something about him in his character, that does say like, he is looking for, like, he's looking for some sense of belonging. It reminded me a lot of Maul and Rebels, like the way he tries to recruit Ezra, right? Like, there is this need to have somebody at your side. But a lot of folks have pointed this out, and I can't play this because they haven't released volume two of the soundtrack, but the very opening of the fifth episode, we hear a quick note. We hear a quick statement of Kylo Ren's theme. And then we hear it very clearly at the end of the episode when he like kneels down over Osha and, you know, says his lines about like, in our triumph, we feel regret or something like that. But we hear the Kylo Ren theme. So perhaps he'll become the original Knight of Ren, you know, like he's aiming to be a Sith, but can't find them, or they reject him. So he starts his own thing. Right. And starts the Knights of Ren. But it is very curious that they play a statement of Kylo Ren's theme twice in that episode. Star Wars is never by accident, right? Like, that Kylo Ren's theme is a theme for the Knights of Ren, but it has nothing to do with him being related to Kylo, right? So and that helmet looks very similar to the original Knight of, or to Ren's helmet from the Kylo Ren comic series. So, so it could be that, right? It could be he's not able to be a Sith, so he starts his own order called the Knights of Ren. You know, who knows?
Yeah, no, that's possible. I hadn't caught that. I was too enamored with the action on screen.
Yeah, yeah, that's totally fair. So yeah, I mean, I do love one shot at like Manny Jacinto or Jacinto. I'm probably saying his last name wrong because
Jacinto, I think.
Yeah, might be a soft J. I'm not quite sure. But all that to say, yeah, he's an incredible actor. Like, I loved him in The Good Place, which is a great show. And it's funny because at the beginning of Good Place, he's pretending to be a silent monk, like Buddhist monk. And then when he finally like reveals what he's really like, he's like this, just this goofball guy who loves the Jacksonville Jaguars. Like, he's kind of the fool character of the show. And I love the fool characters. He's Joey from Friends. Like, he's that type of trope in the story. But it's funny here, he's pretending to be something else. And I love when he is revealed and he looks over to May and he goes, "Hello." Like, he does his Chimere voice, but then goes right back into like his dark stranger voice. So my question to you, Jason, on this front is, were you surprised that he was the stranger?
No, not really. I had thoughts and ideas of what I wanted, you know, of what I thought, you know, what could be cool for it to be. But the way that the story had been set up and the fact that he was there on Kofar with everything, it made sense. Mm-hmm. It made sense. It was a fantastic reveal, but it made sense in hindsight. You know, if I'm looking forward, if I'm actively trying to figure out who it would be, I could probably predict it, but I wasn't.
Yeah.
So it was a little bit of a surprise to see his face, but not a terrible surprise. Mm-hmm. It was still real awesome, though. Yeah. So yeah. What about you?
I never thought it during the first couple episodes, but a lot of people were saying by the end of episode two, they're like, "I bet you he's the Sith Lord." And I was like, I feel like it's too obvious. Like, I feel like it's too obvious that it's going to be somebody else.
Right.
But I thought he was in fact that, though, when he and May go to, oh my gosh, why am I blanking on the planet?
Kofar.
Yeah. And they're having a conversation as they're, you know, going to find Kel Naka. And she says, you know, like, "Oh, what do you owe my master?" You know, well, you know how he is. He collects people. So I was like, okay. But then when she says, "Have you ever seen his face?" You know, I haven't. And he quickly changes the subject. I'm like, I think he's the one. All right. In his bag, like, it's got all his gear in it. You know, I mean, so I will say, though, when he, right after, I mean, we see him, his reveal right after he brutally cuts down Jackie. When we first see his face, the way his hair is just hanging in his face, I honestly, for a moment, I was like, "Who is this guy?" I didn't immediately recognize that it was Chimere. It took me a second to be like, "Oh, okay, that is Chimere." I think the previous episode, when he just says, "You know, I have," and changes the subject, I'm like, "Oh yeah, I think he's the Sith." So it wasn't a surprise to me. But I still think, I mean, there's still lots of questions. Like, why is he after May and Osha? Like, he clearly knows something's up with them.
Right.
And he knows something about Sol. Like, he seems to also have it in for Sol.
I think that's more because of stories that May has told him about what happened to her, you know, her sister and her family and everything. My guess is he's heard her talk about this stuff. And he's like, "Oh, you're that person. So here, let me just dig this knife into you and taunt you with what I know."
Oh, okay.
You know?
Yeah.
That's my interpretation of it. I don't necessarily think he's connected, per se, with anything from the past. I think it's more that, you know, May's been around Chimere long enough that he's probably asked her questions about her past and, you know, what happened with her family and all of this stuff. And, you know, she's told him, you know, at least everything from her point of view.
Sure.
So.
Right. Yeah. One of my favorite little funny moments, though, because I think Chimere is hilarious, because I think Manny is a very funny actor. But when Sol says to him, he's like, "Why risk discovery?" "Well, I did wear a mask," and he kind of lifts his eyebrow. I'm like, that's really funny. Like,
yes.
I was like, that's really good. That gave me such a chuckle. And in a very interesting point to be chuckling, because we've just seen the brutal death of Jackie, who I love. I think most fandom has really loved that character. And we get this chuckle, almost like we kind of needed it almost, right? Like it's been dark and heavy. We needed almost like a lighthearted moment. And how interesting that it comes from the villain, though.
Right. A little bit of dark humor to crack this, to crack everybody's, to sort of crack the ice. You know, so, yeah. But yeah, it was pretty good. It was really good.
By the way, I just took a quick look at my notes, and I did write down this quote from when they're being trained. And I think I just want to share it. So the instructor is saying to Jackie and the other students, maximize your defenses so that you will not need to strike. Maximize your defenses without a need to strike. So again, like they are being trained to just be defensive warriors, not aggressive ones. So again, Chimera's style is too much.
Right. That's the, the creed of the Jedi, so to speak. You know, they are defenders,
right?
Not soldiers.
And to that end, I think that's the kind of the archetype that Yord fits and why I like him so much. Like, I don't love strict rule followers. That always bugs me. Like, rules, I don't like the sentiment of rules are meant to be broken. I don't necessarily buy that, but I think rules are meant to give shape to good things. And when they get in the way of shaping good things, we need to reassess the rules, right? I'm not of the opinion like, let's just throw them all out. We don't need rules, but rather rules are supposed to, like, I see them as kind of like, if you're digging a canal, right? Like you're digging out a way so that the water can flow freely. But if you're digging in such a way that starts obstructing the flow, you need to think about where to dig next, right? So rules are made to be reshaped, not necessarily broken. But I take your issues with Yord in that regard. Like, I think he's like, nope, these are the rules. This is the dogma, the canon. We cannot break it. But what I love about Yord most of all, and this to me makes him far more endearing than anything else, is he really fits that protector mode. Right.
Yeah.
That's the archetypal role of Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan in Phantom Menace. Is they're the protectors. That's the Jedi's ultimate calling, is to be protectors of peace and justice. And that often means protecting people. So Yord, like I mentioned earlier, like his stand down, like I feel a confidence from him that I'm glad I'm there. I'm glad he's there with us. We also see like when the initial part of the fight is going and the red shirts are all getting cut down. Chimera uses, we first get to see the Cortosis, and it shorts out this woman's lightsaber, and he goes to put the killing blow on her, and Yord just he just comes out of nowhere and deflects it. And I love that. I love that shot of his face. Like, I think his name's Charlie Barnett Charlie Barnett, I think, is the actor's name who plays Yord. He's unbelievably talented. And I love the look of determination on his face there. Like, I'm not going to let you do this. Right. And then again, later, right before he's killed, he comes jumping to the rescue of Sol and May and then gets brutally killed. That's what I love about him. He's the protector. Like, he is the one there. And when they hear May scream and Basil indicates that he's found her and they all start running, I love Yord. This is super Qui-Gon. Like, stay in that cockpit. He turns to Osha and he says, Osha, stay behind us. Like, even the way he delivers the line reminds me so much of the way Liam says, like, Anakin, stay in that cockpit. You know, it's Yord being the protector. Like, you can, like, come with us, but stay in the back. We're going to keep you safe. And when Osha is trying to help Sol, and Sol's like, civilian to the ship, and then he force pushes her back, and Yord catches her and he says, civilian to the ship. I like the way he says the same lines, but like kind of just
come on.
Yeah. But
yeah, it's like, right, come
he's
on.
In protector mode again. And I really love it. Like, that episode really endeared me to Yord. I mean, I liked him before it because I think he's such a knucklehead. He's really lovable. But this is the one where it's like, I really love him. He really does care. And I think go ahead.
Yeah, he's a knucklehead, but he's also really good at what he's good at, which is the role of being a protector. And there's a reason why he's a Jedi Knight. Mm-hmm. And he just shows that off in these two episodes.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, Sol now doesn't have a Padawan, and Yord's Padawan no longer has a master. I'd like Sol to take her on, the Zygerian Jedi Padawan. I'd love to see Sol take her on. But even in the fourth episode, I really like Yord's little conversation with Osha as they're, you know, on the trek. And, you know, Osha's like, she stops him for a second. She's like, hey, listen, if we find May, I know I'm not going to be able to stop her. Like, right. She's already was reluctant to stun her when she had the chance in episode two. She's like, I need you to do it. And I love how Yor doesn't, he doesn't like feed the aggression. He doesn't say like, yeah, don't worry, I got it. I'll take care of her. Instead, he offers this really beautiful wisdom of, he's like, Osha, I've known you since we were younglings. May's always been your wound. And I love the way he puts that. And I think, again, that line can be ambiguous. Like, that could be kind of a harsh Jedi line of like, you're not supposed to have attachments, that she was your wound. But it can also be like, to me, I also feel a note of compassion in it of,
well, it's, know, why she left.
Yeah.
You know, she said, yeah, before, she wasn't, it's why able to, she left.
Right. And so I love how Yor then, he kind of redirects things to saying, you know, maybe Sol didn't bring you here to face her, but to face yourself, right? Like, he provides this new perspective, which to me, I take that as, it's very empathetic of Yor,
yes,
for Osha. Like, he clearly cares for her. And, you know, in a very Jedi-like way, but like, it's clear that he had an affection for her. They were buddies back in the day, right? Like, they were buddies as younglings. And I love that he genuinely cares for her and gives her almost this invitation to seeing this mission in a new way, right? Like, she sees her as kind of this burden that she's doing just out of respect for Sol. But Yord is trying to, he's being a Jedi here. He's like saying, you know, well, maybe it could be something more than that, you know?
Yeah. And then, of course, you know, at the end of the fifth episode, when, you know, Yord's been killed and May is starting to run away, Osha, you know, takes out the stun gun and shoots. and shoots May, and then glances back at Yord because he's no longer there to do it for her, you know, so she's got to do it herself.
That's a great catch, Jason. I did not notice that. That's right, because he's been killed at this point,
right? So, you know, he, you know, it's sort of an unspoken, I'm sorry we weren't able to finish this together kind of a of a look. It was, I thought that was very interesting, a very interesting way that they all cut that together, because we get a shot back to Yord after she stuns May, and it's really,
never know. Yeah, I was gonna, like, put that together. That's really great. It's really brilliant. Yeah.
So
should
we talk about Jackie real quick?
I was gonna say, let's talk about Jackie. We talked about this when we talked about the first few episodes, but one of my favorite moments in the second episode is when they go to the Jedi outpost and the Jedi Padawan is being pretty gruff with that young girl who, you know, helped May break in. But Jackie immediately like gets down on her knees, right? She's very compassionate, very like, I'm going to talk to you as an equal, and gets the information they're looking for because she leads with kindness rather than aggression. But we get this tenderness of Jackie's throughout episode four. And I really love her relationship with Osha. I kind of wanted to happen here, and it's obviously not going to, RIP to Jackie, but I kind of wanted Daphne Keen, who plays Jackie, has said in a recent interview that she played the role in relationship to Osha as if she was kind of infatuated with Osha. Like, she does have like a marginal romantic interest in her. So what I kind of was hoping to see happen at the end of the series was Jackie leave the Jedi Order to be with Osha, to show Osha that she doesn't have to be alone in it. And I think this is something that might be, this is a very small spoiler about a Temptation of the Force in High Republic. Jason, is it okay if I share this?
Yeah, that's fine.
It's not a big thing because nothing has happened, but it becomes very clear. I'll be very vague. It becomes very clear in Temptation of the Force that Avar and Elzar they have fallen in love with one another. So I'm curious how that will shake out. We don't get the answer to it in Temptation of the Force, but they are very honest with each other finally about they love one another.
That's basically been the biggest unacknowledged secret for the entire series.
Yeah, so it's not big.
Everyone knows it except the two of them.
Right. But I bring that in to just indicate that, like, maybe in fact that people, like, maybe they will leave the Order. I don't know. In the final book of High Republic, maybe the two of them walk off into the sunset and figure out how to be Force users outside of the Jedi Order because they've fallen in love. And their little love story is really well done in Temptation of the Force. That's all I'll say. I don't want to spoil anything beyond that. It's very well written. But all that to say, like, I was kind of hoping, I was like, oh, I think it'd be really beautiful to, like, get to see what happens when Jedi do leave the Order, like, and not in, because of, like, necessarily strong feelings of hatred, or, like, it's not like Dooku, like, leaving to start something different, but just, you know, one of my favorite Clone Wars episodes, The Deserter, you know, we get to see what it's like for a clone trooper who walks away from the war during the war, right? Like, choosing to make a life for himself. So that was kind of my hope. Obviously it's not going to happen because Jackie is no longer with us. But I
never got that sort of, you know, maybe I just wasn't looking for, but I never got that sort of, sensing that even if there was kind of an attraction there, that Jackie would leave though. Mm-hmm. You know, I think Jackie would have tried to invite Osha back in.
Well, and that's something I want to talk about here in a second. But yeah, I do all that. Yeah, all that aside, I mean, it's not going to happen. But I do think the scene, though, when she comes to say goodbye to Jackie and at the start of the fourth episode, and Jackie, she's like, don't tell me you'll miss me. And Jackie kind of just chuckles. And it's obvious she will. But then Jackie kind of, similar to what Yord does later in the episode, she gives her a new way of thinking, though, by saying, like, listen, I know you want to walk away from all this, but you clearly still care for May, and you know, like, you've got to want to know what's going to happen with this.
You've got to see this through.
I will real quick, because Daphne Keene has a bit of an English accent, and so does Jackie. When she says you care about May, I thought she was saying me, but like with an English accent, right? So she's like, you care about me. I was like, oh yeah, she's acknowledging it. But then I realized, oh no, she's saying May, the character May, not May me in British English, you know?
or Justin Timberlake.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. From NSYNC. Yeah. It's going to be May. Oh man, that'll be a fun mashup. But I love that little moment with them. And I think the most endearing moment, which everybody seemed to really love, rightfully so, is when they're, you know, after Sol cuts down that creature in the forest and they have this talk about, you know, Osha admits to Jackie, like, the thing that always kept me from really becoming a true Jedi. And I love the way Jackie says, a true Jedi. Like she's genuinely perplexed, as if, like, is there such a thing, right? Almost as if, like, there is no hardline definition of what a true Jedi is. Almost like there's no such thing as what it means to be a true fan. Nice little meta commentary there, in my opinion. But, and she's, you know, she says this beautiful line of, you know, we're not what we've lost. We're not defined by what we've lost. We're defined by what we've survived. You've survived a lot. And when she says you've survived a lot, she reaches out and just tenderly touches the arm, which again to me is just nothing more than compassion. Now, again, like, yes, could there be some romanticism in there? Sure. But I think more than anything, she's the student of Sol, who's a master of compassion, just like Qui-Gon. I think that physicality to it, there's just a beauty in it of, like, it's offering like a gentle hand of, like, you know, I really see you. I really acknowledge the struggles you've survived. And you're a, you know, you're a wonderful, better person because of that. So I love that moment. Jackie is, for being such a young Padawan, is just chock full of wisdom.
Yeah. Yeah. She's definitely fast tracking to be a very, very good, very great Jedi Knight. Or was, I should say. unfortunately.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, all of that to say is that the relationship between Jackie and Osha, you know, read into it whatever you want, but it's definitely one of friendship and compassion at the very least. And the fact that Jackie seems to know that Osha needs a friend.
Yeah.
And Osha doesn't necessarily know what to do about that. Right. And so Jackie tries to step in and fill that role.
That's a really good point.
And it's one of those things where, you know, we don't know everything about what's happened yet, but what we have kind of gotten is that it feels like OSHA, the reason that she left is OSHA didn't feel like she was good enough to be a Jedi.
Mm-hmm.
And she's the one who is, you know, she's like, I'm still struggling with this issue. I can't get past it. I'm not good enough to be a Jedi.
Mm-hmm.
And so she left.
Mm-hmm.
Is that's what I'm getting from all the conversations we've had and that sort of thing. And it feels like that Jeki and Sol, and maybe to a lesser extent Yord, are all at this point of like, if this mission gives you the opportunity to resolve that stumbling block that you haven't been able to get over in yourself and to finally heal from everything that's happened with your sister and your family, then maybe you can actually see yourself the way we've seen you, you know, for all this time.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't feel like anybody else has thought that she wasn't good enough.
Right.
It's just she felt that way about herself. OSHA did.
Yeah.
And it does feel like the people that have known her or are getting to know her see her as someone much better than she sees herself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And to that point, I just wanted to mention real quick the scene when Sol goes to her before she leaves the temple and asks her to come with them on the mission. And she says, with tremendous like hope and anticipation, she's like, you want me to rejoin the Jedi? Well, not officially. right. Like, but there does seem to be something in her where like, she does want that. She does want to figure out how to find her way back to the Jedi Order. And I love that trope, Jason. Like, I love that character trope of someone who has left. And I think you're dead on. And I think we'll get more fleshed out as the series continues, but has left because she doesn't feel adequate. But also still wants to, and maybe it could be a little bit doesn't feel adequate and also doesn't feel that the Jedi is the right fit for her. Cause we do know that in some way, Master and Dara also seem to want her to leave. Like that was kind of implied. Yord does that. And she said, but she's very adamant, like, no, I made that choice. Right. But I love this notion, again, like this clearly being informed by my lived experience, Jason, as a chaplain and as a practicing person of faith. But this idea of somebody leaving a spiritual home and not knowing where their place is, but also really longing to go back to it, but in a new way, right? Like find their way back to it and find a more proper sense of belonging there. I love that trope for a character. So I'm really anxious to see what happens with OSHA in that regard.
Yeah, I'm not sure it's going to be good because of where she ends up, you know, and who's left to speak into her.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah. But before we get to that, I do want to just quickly mention, because my goodness, Jason, let's be real. Actually, I want to make sure to touch this real quick since we're in that scene of just mentioned Sol inviting her to come, you know, along. Oh, you want me to be a Jedi? OSHA is very adamant that there's no point in trying to apprehend Mei, right? Like she's gone. She's a murderer. She's a terrible person. This is such a Star Wars trope. And Sol's response of no, when I told her you were alive, her eyes suffered. There's still good in her. And it's the good in her is the part that loves you, right? She still loves you. So there is good in her. And like, I mean, this is Return of the Jedi. This is Padme, you know, Obi-Wan. There's still good in him, right? Like this is such Star Wars tropes and I love it. And it's similar, but its own way. And I really appreciate that. So I just wanted I wanted to mention that quickly.
It's good. It's good because Sol is someone who has been able to see clearly into all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's great that he's wants to make sure to take the time to explain that to OSHA.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he knows how much the past has haunted OSHA. And so he's trying to help do everything he can to fix that.
Yep. Yeah.
So,
but I do want to shout out quickly, Basil the Tracker.
Yes.
What did you think of Basil, Jason?
Oh, he's awesome. Yeah, he's great. I love him. It's great because, you know, we get another. I love it that Star Wars is like, we need another short
species. yeah.
We have Ewoks. We've got droids that are, you know, pint size. There's all these.
Azelin, and Zelen's, right? That's what Babu Frick is, and Zelen, right?
Yeah. And then, you know, there's a whole bunch of digital ones that are pint sized. All the pod racers seem to be on the shorter side.
Yeah.
In the Phantom Menace. But we have another shorter species here. And I'm blanking on his what the heck is he?
Yeah. Well. And has been
anyway.
Yeah. He comes. The species comes out of the old Brian Daly Han Solo trilogy, which I just think is really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. Fantastic. But Tinnen. I don't know how you pronounce that.
Okay.
But anyway, I think it's great. I think it's great that we have like all these force sensitive characters, all this high technology that happens in Star Wars, and we basically have a tracking dog. To find Kel Naka. And it's great. I love it so much because that's also very Star Wars.
Yes. Yes. And the things I enjoyed a lot about most about Basil and his use in these episodes. I mean, like you said, just the cute factor. Like I love when Star Wars plays with the cute factor.
Yep.
But I love his music. I love the theme we get for him. It's very fun and playful. I love the journey scene of them all following him on this hillside. Like it feels very fantasy. Like we're on an adventure. Like that feels very Star Wars fantastical to me.
That was a Lord of the Rings shot if I've ever seen
one. Okay, yeah, I've seen people. I don't know Lord of the Rings. I mean, I know what they are. I've never seen them. So, but yeah, I heard that comparison and I loved it. But I do like when you know, Osha's like, how are we going to find him in there? Right? Like it could take us forever. And Yord's like, we have a tracker. It, to me, the way he says it, it implies that they use trackers, right? Like this is something common for the Jedi that, and to me, it's a sign of humility of the Jedi of this era. Like we can't do everything. So we employ people with different skills than us, different abilities that we actually don't have. I love that aspect of how Basil fits in that kind of trope.
And it feels that in the way he says and the way he talks to Basil and about Basil is that this is Basil's job. Mm-hmm. Is he's a tracker for the Jedi. Like he's done this before. And he's probably been on a mission with Yord before. So, I love it. And I love it.
when Osha asks Yord though, she's like, can you understand that thing, the Basil? And he goes, his name is Basil. And yes, unlike other Padawans who wanted to study Shriwook, I wanted to study something with more nuance, which is like such an arrogant thing to say because Shriwook is wicked hard. But he wants to say, I did something even harder, right? Like he's such a dingus. I love it.
Yeah, I did it. I did it because I wanted to be better than everyone.
Yeah. I made a post about this. It's like, he's that.
But it's what he's saying.
He's that kid in class who just wants to remind you he's smarter than you. So
it's like everyone else is taking Spanish. I'll take French.
Yes. Yes. ancient Greek or something. Right. Like, yeah. But I've got Basil's theme playing here in the background and it's just super fun and playful. Like it's this is so like. This is exactly the type of music John Williams would compose for a character like this. I love it. It's playful. It's the way it's plucking on the strings, the fun use of percussion to give it a kind of, you know, like small-timey Ewok feel. It's great. So I can't wait for our pal Ashton on his new podcast, the Space Opera podcast, talking about this music. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. One of the other things I love about him is the fact that, and this is the story point that's going to come into play in the next couple episodes, I'm sure, is he knows the different smell between May and Osha.
Yeah. Right? Like the way he's following Sol and May into the ship, like he's super sus. Like he's super sus. He suspects something is wrong here.
I mean, and he picked up the head of Pip.
Yeah.
which is great, because it means Pip's going to be whole again, hopefully. But, you know, he knows that that belongs to OSHA because the stupid thing squirted him in the face when they first met.
I'm so sorry.
Right. So he knows that belongs to her, and it doesn't smell like whoever this person is.
Sure.
You know?
Yep.
And of course, you know, he starts screaming when she trips and falls right in front of him. Mm-hmm. So he knows about her and all that stuff. So it's going to be really great. To see how he plays, how he becomes important to the next part of that little discovery. So,
Yeah. And I did like that he picked up the head, because ultimately OSHA thinks she's sacrificing Pip, right? She's like to try to, you know, get those creatures to come, hopefully kill Chimere. But I love that she says, "Pip, I love you, Pip." And then she does. It's like, oh, it's so beautiful. I mean, I've never been somebody who's particularly enamored with droids, but I know a lot of Star Wars fans really love droids and the personalities of droids. And I love people's love of that. But I really liked OSHA saying, "I love you, Pip." Like, it's just really beautiful. And even if it is just a droid, I shouldn't say that. People are like, "What do you mean it's just a droid?" L3 would punch me in the face.
Revolution! Yeah, yeah.
but to me, like, that's a moment. That's an OSHA moment, right? Like, she's willing to give something that means a lot to herself to try to protect this family of hers, right? I love when she says to May, like, you know, the Jedi have been more of a family to me than you ever were.
Right.
So, Basil's definitely onto something.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Quickly to just go back to Jeki for a second. Her fight against May is awesome. I love that we get to get just basically another full on martial arts fight. And to me, it was, people may not like me saying this, but I think it's a better version of Obi-Wan versus Jango. Obi-Wan versus Jango is an awesome fight because we get to see a Jedi have hand-to-hand combat, but it's really short. So to me, this is just as cool, but it's longer. So I enjoy it more. It's a more souped up version. So it's really fun getting to see a Jedi. I mean, we obviously saw Indira also fight May at the very first episode. But mm-hmm. This is a great fight with Jeki. And by gosh, is Jeki. I mean, also, we get to see Jeki use two lightsabers. We get to see Anakin do that for all of 4 seconds in Attack of the Clones. So it's really cool. We get to see it for about 12 seconds with Jeki. You know, like, but she, for being a Padawan, like, she puts up like a heck of a fight, and she's the one able to knock off his helmet, right? And boy, when he stabs her down like that, you know what it reminded me of, Jason, is the episode from season one of Visions, the Sith episode, when the old Sith master cuts down the young Padawan. It gave me a very similar feel to that, right? Yeah. Like this very dark, ominous character cutting down a very much over their head character.
The Elder episode.
The Elder, yes, thank you. I love that episode.
It's probably my favorite. It's really good.
Yeah.
It's a great call. I do love that it does have that sort of sensing to it, but yeah, we get all these great moments and then we're like, all right, and say goodbye to half of the people that you've been caring about in this one episode in particular. So
it's like,
we're going to cut the cast down by half.
Right.
And it's all happening at once.
Yep.
So
now, Jason, I know you've never watched Game of Thrones, but for folks that have watched Game of Thrones, I saw this getting thrown out a lot last week, which this episode is the Red Wedding of the Acolyte. And so the Red Wedding in Game of Thrones is one of the most famous episodes because of it kills off like 4 main characters at the end of the episode, which you did not see coming. And that became like a staple of what Game of Thrones would do, right? It'd make you really like characters and then they kill them. This episode is so dark in that regard. And again, we won't get it until volume 2 of the soundtrack comes out. But when Sol is about to fight the Stranger for the first time when they first whip out their lightsabers. We get a choir, Jason, and it's awesome. Like it's the Acolyte's version of Duel of the Fates. Like, yes, we're going to get an epic duel. What did you think of the fight choreography just in general? Like, whether it's the fight with Sol, Jekki, all the Jedi at once, what was your takeaway of the choreography?
I was very happy. Yeah. It's great because, you know, I love a good lightsaber fight. You know, it's one of my favorite parts of Star Wars is a good saber duel. That being said, I also went on a Chinese action movie binge a couple of years ago. Mm. And I saw, you know, all these elements of the, you know, wushu and kung fu and all the various martial arts that were in this. The shot, when Sol and the Stranger cross sabers and then, like, you know, run across the clearing there together, kind of, you know, saber to saber, and they just sort of run locked together across the clearing,
yeah,
is a very, very big thing that happens in a lot of these Asian action movies. So, there was definitely a huge influence from all that, which Leslie Headland has said that, you know, going into all of it, that she took a lot of influence in those kinds of movies, mm-hmm, too. So, and of course, having someone like what's his name who plays Sol? Lee Jun
Jay.
You know, involved in all of this, it really kind of adds to that same feel that influence is felt a little bit even more. It was really great, really cool. I'm very happy with what we got as far as the action is concerned. Top notch combat. It made me very happy, very excited.
Well, before the show even started, Leslie Headland said in an interview, like, famously, she's like, yeah, I wanted to put combat in here on the same plane as Duel of the Fates from Phantom Menace. I mean, Duel of the Fates has the advantage of the nostalgia that I have for it, but I don't think anything quite touches that. But I do think this is really good. I enjoyed this fight choreography more than anything else in the prequels other than Duel of the Fates. My only small quibble continues to be with the shows. I hate the way the lightsabers look. I think they look terrible. Like, they look like Galaxy Edge props. That's my only thing in the show that bugs me. But again, like, it's easy to look past. I don't get it, but so even during the duels, I'm like, this just looks like people fighting with props that they bought in Disney. but at least it looks really cool. Manny Jacinto said in a recent, so he's now been able to be very forthcoming about the fact that he did in fact train as well. He talked a lot about, I didn't know this about him, but he had a lot of, growing up, he did a lot of dancing. He did a lot of dance classes and he's very well trained in dancing. And he said, learning these fight choreography was very similar. He's like, it was really easy for me to do it because I could draw on my dance choreography. Cause he said it is a form of dance. Like, it's a different kind for sure. But I thought that was a really cool tidbit. Jason, something I wanted to point out about, Chimere that I appreciate is, he's kind of continuing the dialogue. And I love that he and Sol are having this banter during their fight too. I mean, it felt very Empire Strikes Back, Luke versus Vader, right? Like, there's this taunting going on. But Chimere at one point says, like, rules, 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 right? Like, he obviously has no respect for them. But he reminds me a lot of Heath Ledger's Joker from The Dark Knight. There's a line in the famous interrogation scene in Dark Knight when Joker says to Batman, you know, you have all these rules and you think they'll save you. But when the chips are down, I'll show you these civilized people, they'll eat each other. Heath Ledger, what a gift he was in that movie. But I think, like, Chimere kind of brings that energy, and it's different than Palpatine, right? Like, Palpatine's the only full-on Sith we've seen. I always have contended that Vader's, I don't want to say a pretender, but he fell into a trap and became addicted to the dark side, like, more than anything else. Sidious is a full-on Sith. But Sidious is after one thing, power, absolute power. That's what he wants. Chimera is a more chaotic character, though. Like, I just want to be able to do whatever I want, wherever I want. He's kind of this agent of chaos. That's why I think the Joker is the perfect villain in Dark Knight, right? He is the antithesis of Batman, who's trying to bring order to chaos. Well, Joker is just pure chaos. I think what the Jedi Order is very much in the galaxy at this stage in the Acolyte is they are the Jedi Order. They bring order and peace to the galaxy. Chimera is the antithesis of that. He's not looking necessarily for ultimate power from what we've learned so far. He's almost looking to just breed chaos. He's the antithesis of what the Jedi are trying to bring, right?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it is, it's very interesting when he says, you know, I just want to do what I, you know, freedom to be who I want to be and practice the way I want to practice. And I was like, you do realize it's going to get a lot of people killed. I was like, which is not something the Jedi can allow. I'm like, it is one of those things where, and of course he says earlier on, you know, I'm going to have to kill you now. Those are the rules. Yep. And then later on is when he goes, rules, rules, rules. They're meant to be broken.
Yep.
And it's like, you know, he's all over the place.
Yeah.
Which is, you're right. It's that chaos element to him. And it's, I'm wondering how much of it is by design just to get under the skin of, you know, Sol and the rest of the Jedi. And how much of that is just actually him unleashing, you know, for the first time in a long time. So it's really, it's fun to watch, if a bit disturbing at the same time.
And then I think the one thing I just want to mention quick about that final kind of confrontation between May and Osha. Again, there's a very regular Star Wars trope of essentially join me, right? Join me. Yay. Right. May is like, join me again. But Osha won't do it. She rejects that. She rejects that sense of belonging. And so again, like that's just, to me, that's very typical Star Wars. But what I think is really compelling about them is they're essentially arguing over the truth, Jason. They're arguing, right? So Osha grew up with the Jedi being told a story about what happened on Breddock by Sol and others. She's inherited a particular truth that she firmly believes. May has a very different truth that she has come to believe and held dear. And I love that because of how timely it is. It's saying something to our own world right now, Jason, right? Like we have, it's sad to say, but we have such a, there's such a polarization right now that continues to just deepen in our culture. And it comes from a place of like people holding like, no, I know this is true. And the other side is saying, no, I know this is true. So I think what May and Osha's story offers us both in the story itself, but even to us out, you know, to as a mythical story, a truth that it's trying to tell to culture is, and hopefully they'll have an answer to it. And I think it'll be a hard one, but what do you do in that state, right? Like, what do we do when you have people with firm convictions about truth that are in opposition to one another? How do we make sense of that? How do we repair that break? And I think that's what's being offered to us through May and Osha. And I'm really, really excited to see how they might answer that question. Cause I think it's a really hard one.
I think both of them are going to end up losing something in the final analysis of that they held on to, you know, which is life.
Yeah.
You know, everyone has their own, you know, point of view as to what happens in any situation. You know, there's your opinion, my opinion, and the truth. You know, there's your truth, my truth, and the truth, you know, and the truth.
Yeah.
And whatever is in the middle is kind of a combination usually of the two. So it's going to be really interesting to see how it all plays out. Of course, we're now in a situation where, and we kind of alluded to it earlier, where May is, she knocks Osha out, cuts her hair, and takes Osha's clothes in order to, disguise herself and pose as OSHA, leaving OSHA in the woods, in the forest, which I thought was a little heartless. But of course, you know, what else is she going to do? And leaving her to the stranger. So now we're going to have, I mean, I'm not saying that she left him to, she left the stranger deliberately, but that now the stranger has come along and is going to take her. And so now we're in a situation where May, who has believed something probably very destructive and to what, you know, OSHA believes, is going to have to confront that with Soul. And the sort of ivory tower picture of the Jedi and as her family that OSHA has been living with is going to get challenged and battered by the stranger, by Kimir. And we're, you know, we'll just have to see how it all shakes out and who influences who and how they get away, how they get back together. If they do, you know, it's going to be really interesting to see how the rest of the show plays out. And I'm glad that we have this sort of switcheroo, the Prince and the Pauper switcheroo happening, you know, whether it was, you know, it wasn't fully planned that way, but it happened that way. And I'm really glad we have that, because now it's going to be really interesting to see where we go next. And Soul is, you know, in such a state after everything that's happened that I think that's the only reason why May is able to pull this off without Soul immediately sensing that it's not OSHA. But yeah, it's gonna be really interesting to see how long May can keep the wool pulled over Soul's eyes, because I don't think it's gonna be as long as she hopes it's gonna be.
And so I was gonna say, though, I think the our characters might believe that Chimera is dead, though, because when those the space moths come and get him and take him off and we hear him kind of yell off screen, I interpreted that as like Soul and OSHA probably think he's dead. That I don't know. I mean, it's never said either way, but all that to say, but the way the episode closes with the stranger Chimera finding OSHA in the woods, when he uses the force to turn her over, I think he heals the wound in her side. I can't quite tell, but she she has like a cut in her side there, and I'm pretty sure we see it close. So he uses the force to heal her, if I'm seeing this correctly, and I may not be. But when he does that as well is when we hear a statement of Kylo Ren's theme. He says this, I didn't write the quote down, but he says something along the lines of like, you know, truly wonderful beings we are. At the height of our revelation, we feel the depth of our despair, something like that. But he kneels down on her, which this is Obi-Wan with Luke in A New Hope. This is Sidious on the banks of Mustafar with Anakin, right? This is a master finding a new pupil, if you will, right? So,
yeah.
And OSHA is very curious, you know, when she says to Soul, like, what does he want to tell me? What do you need to tell me? Right. Like, so she's now suspect that Soul has kept something from her. And now Chimera is going to be the one to tell her the truth. I'm using air quotes, y'all. You can't see it.
right. Exactly. Yeah. No. And it's so heartbreaking, because Soul was getting ready to tell her when May stuns him and knocks him out.
Yep.
Like, cause you know, so much of this could have been fixed if they had just had a chance to talk. And, you know, Soul's like, I'll explain later. I'll explain it when we're back on the ship and all of this stuff. And we never get to that point.
Yeah.
So it's going to be rough when OSHA finds out what happened or what May says happened.
Right. Yeah. So, folks, I can't wait for this coming week's episode. I can't wait to see where we go next. To me, this show just keeps getting better and better. And we've hit this point of like almost like a reset. Like, who knows where it's going to go? I mean, several of our of our beloved main characters are now deceased. We have a switcheroo with our main antagonist and protagonist. Mm-hmm. We have the revelation that Chimera is the Stranger and all those implications. We still have a backstory that we don't know the truth to. It's that this really, and this is why I think the show is just so brilliant. And I think the folks that are just counting it out for whatever their prejudices are about the show or the directions it's taking is, I think they're really shortchanging themselves from a really good story. You know, it's a really well put in. I stupidly, Jason, have sometimes read the comments, which is the dumbest thing to do. It's always just very angry people with no common sense or intelligence, but people just making assumptions for a show that's not even over yet. And the stereotypical answer is like, it's bad writing. People just throw that out because they clearly don't know what that even means. This show has some of the smartest writing, I would say, outside of Andor. Like, again, Andor is not one of my favorite Star Wars shows, but I will always concede that it is brilliantly made. It is very well written. I think Acolyte is on the same tier. It is incredibly well written. And each episode is giving us just a little bit more. And I love that.
I'm going to reserve full-throated agreement with you on that until I see how it all plays out, because you know, it all, with a story like this, when you've got a mystery, it all comes down to the payoff. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, and that's really gonna make or break all of this. And I don't want to say make or break, like it's either going to, I'm either going to be like, oh, it's the most amazing thing, or it's the worst thing. I mean, it's like, can they land the plane? Can they accomplish what they're trying to accomplish? Does the story of what they're trying to tell work? Sure. And that all comes down to the payoff at the end.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're going to have to wait. We're going to have to wait a couple more episodes because we're going to have more information added and hopefully a few answers along the way. But it's going to be, you know, episode 8 is going to be a big deal. And hopefully it all comes together. Mm-hmm. So,
well, I hope as we talk about the conclusion of this show in a few weeks, Jason, I get to say to you, another happy landing.
I think that's the perfect place to start wrapping this up. If people want to weigh in on their thoughts on these two episodes of Acolyte, or maybe their thoughts on the series so far, Carl, where can people get in contact with us?
Yeah, we are on our mainstay these days is over on Instagram. Follow us there at The Wampa's Lair. You can still find us on Twitter at Wampa's Lair. And always feel free to email us at wampaslairpodcast@gmail.com. And honestly, folks, we would love to hear your thoughts on this show. I mean, if you're going to be really negative, we don't want to hear it. But if you're really enjoying the show or just, you know, we'd love to hear your thoughts. We'd love to hear you share that stuff. And also just a quick plug, if you listen to the show regularly, first off, thank you. Secondly, just an encouragement to subscribe to the show on whatever place you listen to the show. Give us a like, you know, give us a star, you know, give us a quick review, write us a review. It really helps the show. There, like we've said before, there's so many good Star Wars podcasts. We're honored to be among that number. Any little steps like that you can take, it really helps the show be more visible. So we'd appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think that's going to wrap up this show, and then we'll continue the Acolyte and go from there.
Yes.
hopefully there's no more strangers descending from the shadows on us before we get to the end of the show, Carl, because I'd like to see it. That being said, thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Wampa's Lair podcast. It's been episode number 565, Day to Night. For Carl, I'm Jason, and we'll see you next time here in the Wampa's Lair.